Blog Talk Radio.
Sound Health Options Show for May 18, 2014, with Richard, Talk to Me Guy, and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. It's been a long day already. it just seems that way. We are so excited about the conference coming up and the new premiere, so we worked through most of the night and didn't get much sleep, and it's wonderful. For those of you who joined us on the pre-show, or a little bit what we do, that was a trailer for the world premiere of The Business of Disease that will happen here on Saturday the 24th. This is about justice in healthcare and putting health before money, and that's the wrong way around, and that's what Richard and I talk about a lot. Richard, we have RSVPs from Yoda, Dark Vader, James Bond, a federal judge, and they're all going to be there. There's more coming in. But what the people for justice, that stand for justice and stand up for justice, is going to be there. So that's an exciting thing. Any of you who want to join us, get in touch. I'll put the number in chat. 740-698-9119. Excuse me typing on the air. And we'll get you an invitation. This is free. Lots of good people. Bruce Lipton, Amit Gawande, Sonia Barrett. I don't know if you recognize some of those names, but they are some of the leaders in alternative medicine. And Richard and I are always harping about follow the money. So I learned a lesson quickly about what we could do here at the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. When we found out we could get people out of pain from broken legs and things like that, and we could do it with frequency, and there's a big, wonderful article that just came out today, and I'll give you the link to that. I went to the local hospital, and I said, oh, look, this is what we could do, and I showed him all the evidence, and he was getting weirder and weirder by the moment. And finally, he said to me, okay, so what you've presented here is a way for me to lose money for my stockholders. And I'm going, oh, my God, hospitals have stockholders. This is a business. This is not something for our community to help people. Boy, that was a big lesson. And so we're back at it with Obamacare and other kinds of things, trying to help people optimize their health and wellness. I guess we should start the show. We are simultaneously broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio, soundhealthoptions.com, and you can go right to our site and go to radio, go to Blog Talk Radio, and on there you will see our guest for today, Dr. John McGrail, and information on how to join Richard on the audio portion of the show, 347-850-1407, and you can ask questions there. There is a chat. There is also a chat at WebEx, so you can go to our site, and down at the bottom of radio, there is a link there for you to be able to watch the show. We'll be looking at Dr. McGrail's book from Amazon, some of the reviews. We'll be looking at his website, everything he has to offer, right after these few announcements. Well, like I said, we are simultaneously, thank you. They're telling me I'm not recording, and I wasn't. Thank you for that reminder. We are dual-sponsored here today by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health. That's who's sponsoring this big conference and premiere that's coming up. But also by one of our softwares, NanoVoice. You can go to downloads, go to NanoVoice. And this is a personality profiler that we put on here for the public. This is a very short 4 or 5 paragraphs about who you are without all the oughts and shoulds and pressures. And we want to help people reveal the real them without all the garbage. Announcement two, Richard will be handling the next, how many shows, Richard?
I believe 2. Maybe more. Currently, I know of 2.
A happy hour for Tuesday. Do you know what you're going to be doing?
We're going to be talking with, actually, I think this happy hour is Direction for Truth, isn't it?
Oh,
I believe
okay.
On Tuesday.
Okay, yes, you're right.
And I'm going to be talking with Polly Halstead, the author of the Paleo Diet book, Paleo Cuisine, and we're going to branch out from, sort of catch up with her. We've talked to her before. Wonderful recipes, great book. I want to talk to her about her journey with paleo and how it's worked in her health issues, and talk with her more about expanding out into talking about things like, GMOs, fracking, how it affects our agriculture. I say that in a chipper voice because we know otherwise I'll be off on the rant. Good job. Polly Halstead.
There was a commercial on yesterday about, how wonderful we are and we're getting to be self-sufficient in energy and we can let go of all these other countries because of this wonderful fracking. So they are doing an ad campaign. So what a wonderful topic.
Thank you.
What are you going to be doing next Sunday?
That I don't know right now off the top of my head.
TBA.
Guess to be announced. That's right. Exactly.
Aren't we going to have Dr. Wright?
Oh, that's right. Yes. That wonderful interview. I did a pre-interview a little while ago with Jonathan Wright and catching up with him and talking about hormones and sex and digestive enzymes and just the gut and gut health. Jonathan Wright is just an unbelievable resource of information. It just pours out of his mouth. He is great.
We have such wonderful guests. I loved our guest from last week, too. If you missed that show, go back and review it. You can see it on our homepage down at the bottom on the left. This was a man about how to raise your children who have ADHD. But it's more than that. It's how to get along with coworkers, and it's how to treat people with respect in your communications. I loved this book and have bought several copies, and I'm passing around all of them to my family and friends, and as soon as the next batch comes in, I'm going to give it to all the people in the office. I just think it's an incredible book. He was so genuine, so authentic, and I think our guest is going to be talking about that today, too. Remember, this is Guardian Weekend for those of you who are Guardian members. We are going to be talking about nutrition and allergies. It's a 2-hour class this evening from 6 to 8. And if you don't know about the Guardian Network, you can jump on and look at, if I could get to it. The Guardian Network is a group of people who are putting together bioacoustic centers in their community to help their friends and family when things come about, like allergies. And 'tis the season right now for allergies, but we've done post-traumatic stress disorder. We've done countervailing the flu. I can't remember all of them, but we have over 100 softwares that we are sharing with the public. The article that just came out, let me find it, after studies confirm. What came up over on my other monitor. So for people here who are watching, it's a J.B. Bardot archive, Natural Health, Wellness, Green Living, and Alternative Lifestyles. and they have written an article about studies confirm sound therapy heals arthritis, cancer, tinnitus, autoimmune disease, and more using vibrational frequencies. You know, most of these guys are following in our footsteps. A lot of them are using our frequencies. You know, I was looking at this the other day, and we have been doing this for 34 years. And you know that old thing, at first it's scoffed at, and it's ridiculed, and then it's accepted as natural reality. That's the place we are. So many people are using what we have developed. I just think it's incredible. I was trying to look for the link. It's not here, but I will find it for you. And I'll put in all of the links at the bottom about where all of this came from. Okay. We need to do the keynote. Richard, do you want to introduce the keynote?
I always begin chuckling as soon as I hear you mention the word keynote. The keynote is this wonderful thing. It is a thing. It's an eminence from the cosmos that people like NASA and other agencies with acronyms monitor, and Sherry monitors it with her software. I personally suspect, in my opinion, as I like to say, that Sherry's one of the few that actually can analyze this and tell you anything about it. I think others are just catching it like they do so much other data, like, we have to have it, but we're not sure what to do with it. And it's this eminence that Sherry software reads and tells us about the note that it is, and then the interpretation of what that is indicative of, sort of for the timeline that's coming. Like, this keynote is for the 20th, but the effect kind of starts a little early and goes for often 4 to 5 days. And it's called the keynote. I love the keynotes.
Well, I think this must be how ancient astrology started. Somehow they had more information than we do, or more ability to pick up frequencies from other people and from the movements of the planets. So this is the same thing that affects the tides, only we've taken it a step further. Yes, you can look at this from a personality perspective, but we look at it from how these frequencies that are coming to the Earth from our solar system will be affecting your health. Some people feel this several days before it ever happens, like flu season or something like that. They begin to exhibit the frequencies, and it's not really them from an internal perspective. It's from an external perspective of the information that comes to the planet. So the keynote for May 20th, 2014, I've entitled this Assaults on Many Fronts. Richard wants something nice and happy, but there wasn't any this week. So we are looking at the end of the note of C sharp by the frequency, and that's the end of the astrological sign of Taurus. Depending on the year, it changes like the 19th to the 22nd. Okay, medication frequency is being activated. We put this in here because when these medication frequencies become active, people can sometimes experience an overdose. So Valium and diazepam, medications used to treat anxiety, alcohol withdrawal, muscle spasm, panic attacks, are all activated. So watch for the side effects. Do not go off your medication without talking to your physician or wellness provider, or I'll get in a lot of trouble if you do, if you say I said to do that, which I'm not saying. Morphine, a powerful painkiller, is also stimulated until midweek. Now, a lot of the times when people are in hospice, they just give them more and more morphine to slow down the body until they just die. You know, I just don't see why they don't give large doses and let them go, and why they would keep them in that misery. But that's my opinion. Okay. Strongly manifesting for the next few days, frequency associated with chronic lymphocytic leukemia, commonly known as CLL. That's cancer of the blood's white cells, which are responsible for fighting infection by producing antibodies to protect the body. CLL creates a compromised immune system in which the body is weakened to the point that it cannot fight stress, pathogen, invasion, or disease. So I guess this is a warning to eat well, exercise, do everything you can do to keep ahead of that like Richard walks how many miles a day? 4 or 5 miles a day?
4 to 5 miles, yep.
Keeps the blood churning, keeps the body cleared out, actually keeps your aura larger. You can do kind of the same thing for your body with, like, deep breathing. Okay, muscles and stress, interosseous of the fingers, which provides flexibility in the hands. Several, and this is the real kicker that Richard and I were talking about that we don't particularly like, but we don't have much control of it. There are 64 different forms of human papillomavirus. This causes warts on the hands, feet, and mucous membranes of the oral, anal, and genital cavities, and it's in stress. All of these different kinds are in stress over the next few weeks even. So what we have done is look at the charts for Gardasil, which is a 3-layer vaccination that they're forcing on children in school. And what's ending up as we follow this is it's becoming a fertility issue. So we looked at the 4 types of HPV virus that they force on you. Now, they forced this in Texas first until 18 of the girls died, and then they repealed the law. But it is the law now in California. And I've written an article about it and what it does to the body when you're injected with it. There are 4 kinds of HPV vaccinations. HPV-1 has a frequency, and it's the same frequency as the parathyroid hormone that controls calcium. There's 2 forms of HPV-11. One is just a mood elevator, like the Valium, lithium, things like that. But the other one is progesterone frequency, and that's required to maintain pregnancy. HPV-16 is vitamin A, an essential nutrient for fertility, and NADPH, an enzyme from the liver that's associated with male infertility, and calcitonin, something else that regulates serum calcium. HPV-18 is right on the money, estrogen and testosterone, reproductive hormones. So bioacoustically speaking, almost every frequency represents several things, a nutrient, a medication, a muscle. So in this case, somebody very smart who knew what they were doing with frequency created these Cervarex and information to create, well, I'll just read what I've written here. Gardasil and Cervarex immunizations were developed allegedly to prevent HPV outbreaks. Acoustically speaking, the chart shows that the frequencies of Gardasil and Cervarex correlate with issues of fertility and conception. This would potentially cause issues with reproduction. And on the site under Keynote, I have put a link to an article that I've written about it. And I don't know if the link works. I didn't try it. But I'm hoping that you can just double-click on this little paperclip and see the entire expose of these experts who are talking about Gardasil and how much they are lying. That's what the part I love about vocal analysis. You can tell what people's intentions are, both from an internal perspective for themselves and an external perspective of what's coming toward them from other people. Now, that leads into a great introduction to our guest.
That does. That was a heck of a build-up. I like it. The keynote always mind. The keynote always blows my mind. I know I say this every show, and I've been saying it for years, but it always blows my mind because it's so, you know, amazing. Okay. Well, to our guest, Dr. John McRail's practice is dedicated to helping people create health, wellness, personal change, growth, empowerment, and spiritual balance, focusing on the integration of synthesis. In his new book, The Synthesis Effect, Your Direct Path to Personal Power and Transformation, he shows us how you become you, that you already have everything you need within you to transform your life and how to reach practical enlightenment. Synthesis works through an exclusive mixture of models techniques, traditions, and wisdom that addresses both the conscious and subconscious levels of human behavior. Dr. McGarrell's writings have been featured in Time, Reader's Digest, U.S. News, Cosmopolitan, Red Book, Brain World, and more. Boy, that's a bio. Let's welcome Dr. McGarrell to learn about the techniques and processes to empower across the spectrum of behavioral and emotional issues. Good morning, Dr. McGarrell.
Good morning, Richard. How are you today?
I'm very good, and I know you're in California, so you're in good weather as well. I'm not sure about the rest of the country.
Nor am I. I haven't looked at anything yet, but yes, it's beautiful down here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I have to open. We have a lot to talk about, but I'm always curious. What was your path that led you to write this book? Was it a personal thing that occurred, or was it an evolution from your own private practice, or how did you get to writing this book?
Well, it's an interesting question, because it was an evolution largely through my private practice based on the research I did for my doctoral dissertation. And that was really the question I was asked, because, you know, we have been behaving and the way we are for hundreds of thousands of years, and I'm trying to figure out an original topic for research for a doctoral dissertation. I'm thinking, what do I have to offer human behavior at this stage? And it dawned on me that I had, at the time, 10 years of case studies, and I said, you know, I'm going to just take a look and see what the difference is between clients who do really, really well and create the change and transformation they came to seek, clients who sort of do okay, and those few, unfortunately there only are a few, that really don't get it and don't do well. And as I researched well over 1,000 private cases, I began to see patterns. And it all began when I started incorporating spiritual techniques with hypnotherapy, conventional hypnotherapy, and really started looking at a holistic approach to helping people create change and transformation in their lives. And that's how the process of synthesis was sort of born. And then as I used it and it became more and more effective, I had so many clients say, you know, John, you got to write a book about this. I have never felt so good so fast. And over the course of several years, really, I finally said, okay, well, I'll see if I can do it. And that's how the book came to be.
When I was reviewing the book and reviewing other notes that I had, I really came up with, because I think in bullet points often, because I'm doing announcements and things, and I really thought that after I read this, that this book really gives such humongous new meaning to the phrase, changing our minds. This just seems like such a powerful, you know, perspective on really changing our minds. But instead of just using that as a term, you're really, you know. Do tell us more about synthesis. That's just my bullet point review of like, wow, this is really about changing our minds, not really, but actually changing our minds. It's such a powerful possibility.
Of course, and you know, there's an old catchphrase: change your mind, change your life. And it's really, really true. If you think about the human being, and I like to think about us in terms of energy, because as you both know, it is just really energy. Everything is based on the same universal energy. So we could think of a human being as a soul, as a spirit, which is one form of energy, the energy of consciousness, the mind, living in this magnificent machine we call our body. I have a friend in London, Lynn McTaggart's husband, who's just a wonderful, wonderful philosopher, and he calls the body the space-time suit that spirit inhabits so we can live on this plane. And I love that notion, and most of my clients do as well. And so we can think of the human mind living in this beautiful thing we call our space-time suit, and here we are. And everything that happens to us, our entire experience, has to be processed through the mind because it is our essence. And so if your life isn't working the way you want it to, if you're afflicted by low self-esteem or confidence, or you have physical issues, you're overweight, or you're addicted to cigarettes or some other substance, whatever it may be, and we all have stuff, we all have things that are holding us back from living the way we want to, the way to create permanent change has to happen through changing the mind. And, of course, most of our minds dwell or are what we would call subconscious. It operates automatically. And the subconscious mind is very much like a computer. It's programmed very early in life, and once it has its programming, its database, like a computer, it will play those programs over and over and over again automatically until it's changed. And so that is why the concept of synthesis incorporates both conscious cognitive thinking, which is what we are most in Western culture used to thinking about, and the more powerful subconscious part of the mind. I know Sherry mentioned Bruce Lipton a few minutes ago. He's one of my favorite authors, and I did a lot of study of his work. And the whole concept of the subconscious, it is much more powerful than the conscious mind. It processes much more information much more quickly. And a great metaphor for this is to think about learning how to drive a car. Most of us can think about that. When we first learn how to do it, there are so many things going on. You have to put your feet on these pedals, and how much pressure do I put? And I've got to look where I'm going, and I've got to look behind me, and I've got to look at my speed, and I've got to make sure I don't hit cars on either side. And in the beginning, that's a very conscious process, and it can be really stressful. And then with practice, it gets ingrained. It becomes automatic because all of that is transferred, if you will, to the subconscious mind. And, of course, now you don't even think about driving. You just get in, you turn the key, and the next thing you know, you're where you want to be. And that's a great illustration of the difference of the power and how the functionality of the two parts of our mind.
Well, and that phrase you used, ingrained, leads me to a term that you wrote or I heard you talk about, the thought-feeling-emotion loop. And I think this is that ingrained thing is such a sleeper of, because I oftentimes think about it as I've taught other people to drive. I've been driving for a really long time, and it is very much like, I didn't even know I got here. Not like I'm not paying attention. It's just that it's amazing what you actually think about driving, how much action there takes to drive a car, particularly if you're driving a stick shift. So it's about ingraining, and that leads me to this phrase I've heard you use about thought, feeling, emotion loop, where those things can be ingrained. But it gets tricky. that would be my phrase. It gets tricky. You know, we're ingraining, you know, stuff that's not serving us. How do we do that? How do we change that? How do we reorient it? You know, how do we turn the Titanic a different direction?
Well, you know, that's a marvelous thought. And what you're talking about, the thoughts, feeling, emotion loop, is part of what I call the quantum reality equation. And it's a very simple and simplified diagram that I use with my clients to illustrate to them and to show them how we literally create our own reality. And, of course, this is based in hard scientific fact now that we do create our own reality. We can think of living or the process of life as an exchange of energy on a multitude of levels between the being and its environment. So here we are, the spirit, the consciousness living in our body, and we are taking energy in. We are seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching, and energy goes out in a variety of ways. We move, we think, we behave. And this interchange of energy, which we call life, creates this thoughts, feelings, and emotions loop. It creates thoughts, and thoughts interact with and create an energy we call feelings, which interact with and are the instantaneous expression of a more primal energy that we call human emotions. And I believe firmly, after many years of research, that in modern Western culture, and when I say Western, I mean technology-driven culture, which is most of the world, as opposed to the more ancient indigenous cultures and tribal traditions. But in modern Western culture, that thoughts, feelings, and emotions loop is stuck on. We have become singularly talented at focusing on what I call the dark side of the contrast equation, lack, because all life is processed through this one essential notion, and that is contrast. Is this good? Is it bad? Is it happy? Is it sad? Is it pain? Is it pleasure? Is it love? Is it hate? Is it peace? Is it war? Is it yin? Is it yang? Contrast is how we evaluate this thing we call life. And in Western culture, we have become really good at focusing on the dark side of contrast. Not enough, insufficiency, gloom and doom and tragedy. You know, you turn on the news at night, which I don't do very much anymore, And what do you hear? All the bad stuff that's going on. I really think that when they do a news broadcast, they should say, listen, ladies and gentlemen, we are about to tell you about all the horrible things that are going on in the world and our city. But before we do, remember this. Most of the people and most of the planet right this moment are perfectly fine. We don't focus on that part of it. And so this loop, thoughts, feelings, and emotions, if you go through it enough, it does become ingrained in the subconscious computer, and we form a very powerful energy with enough repetitions called beliefs. Our beliefs are nothing more than thoughts that we have thought over and over and over again. And this is something that I borrow from Abraham Hicks. I don't know if you're familiar with Esther and Jerry Hicks and the teachings of Abraham, which is just fascinating and, again, one of my favorite spiritual teachers. But beliefs are nothing more than thoughts that you have thought. So many times they become two things, automatic and unquestioned. And that leads to what we call our perception of truth. Now, again, what you perceive as true need not have any basis in fact whatsoever. In other words, take an example, 6,000 years ago, everybody on the planet believed it was their truth that the Earth was flat, and it created a very limiting reality. They were afraid to go out to sea. They were afraid to go too far out in any direction because they'd fall off and get eaten by the monsters. So they had a very insular reality that they created through their perception of truth, and that's exactly what we do today. What we perceive as true creates the energy of our reality, and because energy cannot be destroyed, it has to go somewhere. It has to flow. And what happens is it flows right back through the loop. And so we perpetuate this loop of thoughts, feelings, and emotions, positive or negative, but most of us tend to focus on the negative, which creates a reality. So to get back to the point, if you want to change your reality, you have to change that loop. And that's happening mostly in your subconscious mind. So again, it goes right back to the first point that we were talking about. In order to change your life, you have to change your mind. And it is yours. You own it. It doesn't feel like we have control over it, but we can, and that's what synthesis, of course, is all about.
Dr. McGill, is there any benefit to, or benefits or non-benefits, from being aware of self and others, or is there any benefit to being just blissfully unaware?
Well, you know, Sherry, I suppose we could make an argument for either one of those conditions. In my opinion, and it's only that, I believe that the more aware we become, the more mindful we become, the more we become balanced and integrated with our physical, emotional, and spiritual energies, the more evolved we become. And I do believe that we come into these lifetimes as spirits, as souls, as entity, to evolve and grow. And, you know, if you believe in reincarnation, and there's an enormous amount of evidence supporting it, each lifetime, hopefully, is a teaching experience, a learning experience. And so the more mindful, the more present, the more spiritually integrated we become, the more we evolve. Now, on the other side of things, if you're completely unaware and you have no idea of any of this, you are blissfully ignorant. And maybe you don't even know that things are bad. So I suppose you could create an argument for either one of those conditions. But in my opinion, I certainly think that growth and mindfulness and awareness, if you will, spiritual evolution is a much preferred path.
Well, how did we lose it in the first place?
Great question. And again, based on my research, I believe it really began to occur with the advent of modern science and technology. If we look at the ancient cultures of the world, and this is a fascinating fact that a lot of people don't think about, but long before they knew one another even existed, and they were separated by vast geographies. All the ancient cultures of the world, the tribal cultures, the indigenous people, if you get rid of the trappings of their traditions and ceremonies and whatnot, I call that sort of, you know, the icing on the cake, so to speak, or my brain is not giving me the word I want now, but at their core, most of their philosophies were fundamentally the same, and that was that they were spiritual beings. They lived in balance with themselves and with the universe, and they, you know, it's interesting, they didn't suffer from a lot of diseases that we find in Western culture, like IBS and Crohn's disease and obsessive compulsive behaviors and those sorts of things. Those conditions you cannot find any evidence of in these ancient cultures until they're exposed to Western thinking. And so as we developed modern Western science, if you will, and I think it really took off with the Great Enlightenment in the Middle Ages. Things before that were pretty dim. You know, the church controlled everything, and rational thought was not encouraged. And so at some point, someone said, you know what, no. Let's take a look and see what's really going on. And so the concept of empirical science was born about 500 or 600 years ago. And when they separated science from religion, which had to happen, it had to happen so that we could learn more, they forgot that spirit, our essence, is not part of religion. And so they sort of left it there. I call it the great separation. And that's when we became to start thinking about the world, the universe, and even the human being as machines. Very, very mechanical. And if we can understand the mechanics, if we understand how the machine works, then we can control things. And that's how modern Western science and philosophy evolved. And it just has become more and more and more about what's not going right than what is. And what we have to do, I believe, and it's happening now, your work is indicative of that, is we have to reintegrate science, which is marvelous and miraculous in many ways, and spirit, which is our essence. Whether we like it or not, we are spiritual beings, and that has been scientifically proven. So it's just a matter of, okay, let's take a look at things again and bring it all back together and live more holistically. I know that's a big word in your lexicon. And when we do, we're happier, we're healthier, we live longer, and we live more balanced lives, because it's all about balancing energy.
Well, when you talk about, because science came in, was this because people more believed in science, or they just taught this? Was it part of school? Was it part of leaving behind spirituality? How did we get divided?
Well, I think what happened was this. When the early scientists said, you know, okay, look, it's not just about God pushing a button and things are happening. Let's take a look at what's really going on. And with the discovery of how certain things work, when we discovered gravity, when we discovered that the Earth was round, when we discovered that the Earth was not the center of the universe, we can thank Copernicus for that, back in the, I can't remember exactly when it was, 15-something, we began to sense that, hey, we do have some control over things here. We can exert more control, and with control, we have that feeling of power. And, you know, the essence of humanity, I think, is to feel that we are in control of our destiny and that we have some understanding, and that's how it began. And because this empirical evidence supported the notion of having more control over things, we forgot the fact that we are spiritual beings, and we left that in with the ceremonies and the rites and the dogmas of the religions of the world. And I'm not in any way denigrating religion. Religion and spirituality can be very, very closely allied, which is the essence of it. That's what it's supposed to happen. Of course, unfortunately, with most religions, egos get in the way, and hierarchies and dogmas, and, you know, we kind of, you know, it becomes you're down here and we're here, the clergy, and God's up there, and you have to go through us to get to God. Well, that's sort of how it happened. Science felt a lot better to those people because it gave them a sense of control. They didn't have to rely on some omnipotent being that they couldn't really understand. And that's where it started. But, again, we have to get back to the essence of the fact that we are spiritual beings. The biggest part of a human being is in the non-physical realm. I'm sure you're familiar with Carillion photography, where they can actually take a photograph of the human energy system. The part of our energy that fits in the body is like the part of your arm that fits in a sock puppet. Most of us is in the non-physical realm, in what we would call the spiritual realm, if you will. And that's connected to the energy of all creation, the universal field. So, you know, it was a very simple mistake. It's understandable. And now, thankfully, it's being corrected, because through that we will get back to our true roots, if you will, hopefully as a species, before we destroy our home.
Well, it sounds to me like what you're saying is it took the the control or the belief system outside of us and gave it to some external source, and your book is helping put that back. Can you talk about how people should work with your book?
Well, yeah, thank you. It really is about taking the true control back. In my theory, and again, it's just an opinion, but it's supported by so much empirical evidence, if you will. That's the beauty of science, science and spirit coming back together. We are all connected to the energy of divine creation, if you will. We could call it whatever you want, but it has been scientifically proven that the universal energy field that makes up everything that exists has an innate intelligence behind it. And I don't mean to get too hyper-philosophical here, but each and every person, if you want to use my book, it's very simple. We talk about, first of all, how did I get here? How did I become who I am? How did I get my hang-ups, my habits, my limiting beliefs that I'm not good enough, smart enough, sexy enough, or whatever enough? How did I get, you know, limited? And I talk about that, and that's the whole basis of power. Power, or, you know, knowledge is power. There's an old cliche right there, and cliches get to be cliches because they're true. So once you understand how you got where you are, then the next stage is to present a set of tools, if you will, techniques, methods, traditions, that help you undo it, create the change, and then the third part of the book is a method through which to use the tools. And the way I wrote it was to make it very understandable, to make it very casual and conversive, very much like I treat clients in a session. And while we are creating the understanding and presenting the tools, the reader is actually using the tools right from the introduction to create their own synthesis. And so, and along the way, I share stories of real people like you and me, and I'm just a regular guy. I had my own stuff, and I share part of my stuff and my transition and evolution. But I share stories of real clients that came in with some really life-limiting problems, and through the use of the tools and the methods, transform their lives. So, you know, there's that encouragement. Well, if this person can do it, and this was a real person, then maybe I can do it too. And the truth of the matter is we all have exactly what we need to create whatever change we want. It's a question of understanding, knowing how to do it, and then the doing. There is work involved. It's not magic by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, what are some of the tools that you use?
Well, first of all, just from the logical cognitive perspective, again, understanding is amazing. Once a client understands how this limiting belief, say, I'm not worthy, I get that a lot, or anxiety, I have no control over my life, just through the logical cognitive portions, the formula for change, the quantum reality equation, the great separation, the seven deadly MEMS, and all these, you know, basic formulas and models that are very simple but very illustrative, according to the people who use it, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, but it does seem to work. And then we use the tools that help us tap into that powerful computer we call the subconscious. Hypnosis is certainly one, and hypnotherapy, meditation, which is its very close cousin, essentially the same state of consciousness, even though it affects different parts of the brain. Those are two very powerful tools to help tap into the subconscious. And then within the umbrella of what we would call hypnotherapy, neurolinguistic programming, there are a variety of techniques that are very simple and very powerful. Exercises, little mnemonics, like here's one, does this choice, and by choice I mean thought, feeling, behavior, action. Does this choice that I'm about to make or am I making serve my growth, my well-being, and the greater good? That's a little mantra that I teach a lot of clients. They're asking themselves and evaluating the choices that they're making, because everything you think, do, say, and feel is the product of a choice, most of which happened subconsciously. Well, when you become conscious of the choices, including the subconscious choices, you gain a huge sense of control. Does this choice serve my growth, well-being, and the greater good? Yes? Great. Jump in with both feet. If the answer is no, and you have to be honest with yourself, then you have to say, well, what choice or thought or feeling would serve my growth, well-being, and the greater good? And I think I'll make that one. With some practice, it becomes automatic. And with a little bit of consistent practice, we literally can get to a state where we are living our lives virtually free of suffering, and that's what I call practical enlightenment.
And can you, I want to introduce the MEMS and ask if your cave is nicer than my cave is one of the foundational MEMS.
Well, yeah, actually, it really is. It all began with the fact that human beings got free time. And once we got free time, once we had some time to sit back and say, you know, I don't have to worry so much. I've got food, I've got shelter, I've got water, which is the basic, you know, you look at our cousins on the planet, the lower animals, so to speak, although they're not, but they really spend the vast majority of their time getting food and shelter and procreating. And human beings, because of this marvelous thing we call the conscious mind, where we have logic, reasoning, free will, and the ability to communicate the way we do, and, of course, our opposable thumbs, we found this thing called social evolution, and we got some free time. And now suddenly we're sitting back and we're saying, hey, that cave does look better than my cave. I think I want it. That was the beginning of lack. I don't have enough. I don't have enough comfort. We don't have enough food. We don't have enough power. We don't have enough. That is the primordial mem, is lack versus sufficiency and abundance. And then it also evolves to this desire for control. The more control I have over my environment, the more comfortable I am. And the more comfortable I am, the more control I want. And so that begins to sort of create this perpetual cycle. The third one is this concept of empiricism, and again, Western culture. I'll believe it when I see it. Show me the proof. And we are obsessed with that, which is exactly antithetical to the way the ancient cultures thought. We have to see in order to believe. And the ancient indigenous tribal cultures, who lived a much more healthy, balanced life, in my opinion, they believe in order to see. And, of course, quantum physics and quantum science is proving that through our energy exchanges, we create our own reality. So what you believe, you are going to see, good or bad, happy or sad. And then, of course, this concept of isolation. We isolated ourselves from our spirituality. And the more isolated we become, the more unbalanced we become. And I think that's one of the reasons that 85% of my caseload today are people who are anxious. They just feel out of control. They have this constant dread because we have been just imbued with the concept of negativity and lack and gloom and doom. And so we're isolated through the great separation from our spirituality. And then, and again, this is just my opinion, I think another really important mem, if you will, which is sort of like a social gene, is this concept of conditional love. I think most of us today learn, we're all born full of unconditional love, absolutely full of it. We're in love with ourselves. We're in love with everyone. We have no ego yet, so we have not learned about conditional love. If you do what I want, I will do what you want. That is a learned process, but it is also very, very antithetical to a happy, wholesome life because conditional love isn't unconditional love. And that creates a sense of what I call false self-esteem. Basically, we begin to sense or judge our value through the opinions of other people. And with 7 billion of us on the planet, there's no way you can please them all. And so our self-esteem, which is perfectly intact at birth, we know we're perfect little beings, we know there's no such thing as failure, we don't care what anybody thinks of us, and we know that we can do whatever we want. That's how we all come into life, and then it gets beaten out of us. So we have this falsely placed self-esteem. And these 7 mems all just keep feeding one another in this vicious cycle of lack. And that is the essence of Western thinking today. And that's what has to be changed, not only from a cultural perspective, but from an individual perspective. Almost everybody I see believes fully that they cannot change. That's why they come to see me or someone like me. And I just want to say that if you do feel that way, there is help out there, and that's one of the things that I provide in my book, is if the book itself, for instance, isn't enough, and for some people it might not be, get the help. Get the professional assistance you need, because we all deserve a happy, joyful, productive life. That is our birthright, and this whole process of synthesis and your process of bioacoustical treatments is all about helping people recreate or rediscover that wonderful feeling of the integration of physical, emotional, and spiritual energies. And when you synthesize those, hence the term synthesis, life becomes fun. And that is rule number one in the McGrail method. Life is supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be gloom and doom and suffering. That is not the way it's supposed to be. And so let's get it back there.
Absolutely. And do you think, I have a bigger, sort of a bigger question. In the days of I have a good cave, I have water, I have heat, I have a wife, I've procreated, everything's good, I'm safe, I haven't been eaten by a giant lizard today, I'm happy, everything's good. And in that time, there wasn't as much weird quantum energy in the sense of nobody was fretting beyond the, like, I have food, water, heat, I'm in a cave, I'm safe. Now we have all this just, like, amazing amounts of noise in the field, electronic noise, news noise. People then take that information and careen out into their own, I'll call it a mini-mem, but that's my own, you know, interpretation. And how do we get into our own quiet, I know that you do, I just don't know what it is yet, give us something to, like, get into what I would call a more quiet space. So we can get in, you know, we can create our own mems of changing our reality, changing our mind. But is there a, you know, can you give a bullet point trick to that, of like getting into that inner space of, oh, it's okay and I'm safe in here? The cave space, I guess I would call it.
Well, I think that the key to that is to realize that, and you're right, with technology, and we have you know, the ability to disseminate information and energy across the globe instantaneously. We can watch a natural disaster happening live on TV, and I mean, going back to the tsunami in Japan, and all of these things. And so I believe that our mass consciousness has a huge effect through these MEMS, if you will, on our feeling of individual well-being. So it's up to each individual. It has to start with each person to say, okay, look, am I happy with the way things are? I mean, am I happy being obsessed with material things? Am I happy not feeling good about myself? Am I happy being addicted to cigarettes? Am I happy being overweight or whatever it is? And, of course, the answer is almost always no, I don't feel so good. When we're out of balance, I think the way I call it is we feel broken. There's just something wrong. It just, ugh. And so as an individual, the first thing is to say, okay, I want to change. I want it, not because someone else wants it for me or not because someone thinks I'll be better off for it. I want to feel better. That's the first decision that has to be made. That is a conscious, rational decision. And I am going to stop listening to what everybody's telling me about how I should live my life. Because, you know, everybody knows how you should live your life. They'll tell you what you ought to do. I'm going to stop listening to that. What do I really need? What do I really want? And then through that process of integrating and balancing physical, emotional, and spiritual energy, which is very simple to do, physically, eat well, move your body vigorously several times a week because we have bones and muscles. We're supposed to move. Put good fuel in it. Get enough sleep. And your body will take very good care of you for the most part. Emotional, that's the ego. That's where all the seven deadly memes come from. Your ego, you got to say, okay, what? I'm going to just be who I want to be, not who somebody tells me I should be. And, of course, the spiritual part of us, through a simple, consistent meditative practice, if nothing else, does an enormous amount to help balance that energy and to help you feel whole, aware and mindful. And when you go through mindful, just to go right back to where we were, because it is sort of circular, isn't it? Chicken and egg. When you are more mindful, when you are more aware, you can make informed choices. So as events are occurring, which may be out of your control, you can respond to them in a way that is empowering to you. And the more you do that, the more you see that events begin to transpire that actually create the energy and the feelings you want, because we do create our own reality. It's amazing, this whole concept of the law of attraction. You know, what you put out energetically goes into the field, and out in the field, in the universe, there's no good or bad or happy or sad. There's no contrast out there. Energy is energy is energy. And the whole concept of the law of attraction, which, again, has been scientifically proven to exist, energy flows along lines of attraction. Birds of a feather flock together. You don't see crows hanging out with pigeons. They hang out with crows. Silly example, but it works. What you put out is going to have a huge effect on what you attract back. So if you believe in order to see, you begin to see what you want to believe. If you expect certain results, then you tend to produce those results. Good or bad, happy or sad. Remember, the universal field doesn't care. And so it is, again, just a simple balance and integration of physical, emotional, and your spiritual energies that create this marvelous feeling of, again, of life that is very enjoyable. And I don't mean, when I say life is supposed to be fun, I don't mean that it's an endless series of hedonistic experiences. That's sort of a teenage version of fun. It means that when you get up in the morning, you look forward to your day. You like, or hopefully love, what you do to make money, because unfortunately we have to. You like the people that you're engaging with. You like how you're living your life. And you like your relationships a lot. And when you feel that, you're not suffering very much. And that's what, again, I call practical enlightenment. And anybody, I say this again, anybody can achieve that with a little dedicated work and the right assistance if they need it. And that's what the whole book and synthesis process is about, is to help people have that. Because, boy, it's so great when you live that way.
Well, I'm going to open two cans of worms.
Go ahead.
What do people do about things that are totally out of their control but still affecting them, like this housing bubble where so many people lost their homes and they and their children were living in their car? You know, I can't see that those children created their reality, but there they are. Do you have some magic trick to helping people through things that, you know, the Veterans Administration won't see people and give them help? There's rationing going on. Obamacare stuffed down people's throats. They have to have insurance, but it's out of their control. How do you tell them to deal with that, or how do you help them deal with that?
Well, again, you said something that's very interesting, Sherry. There is no magic trick. I wish there was, and I actually have a magic wand in my desk because I get a lot of people that innocently come in expecting that I'm going to tap them on the head and put them into hypnosis and teach them a few tricks and boom, everything's going to be changed. And unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. There's no magic. And, you know, when you mention children, this is really hard for us to fathom. I mean, why would children be born in a place like Ethiopia where there's, you know, famine and they, you know, they die at this horrible age? We cannot understand that. That is much larger than our understanding allows us as individuals. And I do believe that, again, this is a philosophical thing, I do believe, based on what I've read and researched over the years, that we all do choose our life before we enter it, and then once we enter it, of course, there is this thing called free will, but it is the soul's journey that is pre-chosen. For whatever reason that we can't fathom on an earthly plane, they do come into these lives, they do pick their parents, and then, you know, they're off to the races in this thing we call the Earth School. It's hard for us to understand why anybody would choose that, but we don't know what that particular soul's requirements are, what lessons they need to learn. That's something apparently that we find out after we transition out of our physical bodies and go back to the spiritual realm. So, no, is there magic? No. But I would say you start with the power of love, unconditional love for one another in the family, and then you start with the ability to change your circumstances. Everybody's going to have a different set of circumstances, but everybody has the ability to make those changes. And, you know, can we change politics? Can we change the geopolitical nature of the planet overnight? God, I wish we could. And so it's going to be a gradual change as humanity evolves out of some of this nonsense that we are dealing with now. Politics and ego, which is all, it's all ego-driven. Politics is all ego-driven. That's, you know, I don't want to get into politics because that's a huge can of worms. But I'm convinced that as a species, if we all begin this transition as individuals, that's where it starts, that with the viral nature of information and energy dissemination today, that one person will enlighten another, will enlighten another, will enlighten another, and then it can grow viral. And I do believe that humanity has the ability to evolve out of all of this nonsense and to, you know, get back to our roots, living in balance, living in balance with our earth, with the universe, with one another. Will it be perfect? No, because we're human, and by nature of taking human form, we are imperfect. But boy, it can be an awful lot better than it is. I wish there was a magic trick, but there's not. It's one step at a time, and we all get stuff thrown in our paths that we don't think we have any control over, and some way, somehow, we grow through those lessons, and it is doable. Do we need help sometimes? Absolutely. Is it there? Yes. It's just a question of finding it.
That was a quick hour.
They tend to be.
Richard, do you have any final questions?
No. It's a whole nother show. I just think that, you know, my thought is that the feeling to me of, you know, really getting back to that space of I have food, I have water, I have a good cave, I'm safe, I haven't gotten eaten by a lizard, just seems like, you know, it feels like moving back into that headspace, well, maybe not so much the lizard part, but, you know, creating that meme of I have my basic needs, I'm safe, I'm okay, you know, have that instead of the fret, worry, concern, fear, how is this going to come tomorrow? You know, it's a tricky balance. I think it's a, you know, I love the work. I love the, you know, synthesis work. I'll now fully be able to try and read the book. And I just think it's, you know, I think you're doing great work. Do people see you, I guess I should ask these questions because we're at the end of the show. Do people see you one-on-one? Are you still available as a practitioner, or have you moved into lecturing, speaking, doing classes, and writing books?
Well, both. I still have a very thriving private practice, and I have clients all over the world because a lot of what I do can be done remotely. I do see people one-on-one. I do speaking engagements as I'm invited, and lectures and workshops are in process, and I do a lot of media appearances like this. And by the way, we can do another show anytime you want. I'd love to come back. This has been so interesting, and I love the work you're doing. So if you ever want me back, we can do it. We've just scratched the surface. And I can be reached through my websites, www.drjohnmcgrail.com or www.hypnotherapylosangeles, all one word, hypnotherapylosangeles.com. I'm reachable by email or phone or text, and I do attempt to answer every email or phone call personally as I can. If I get a whole bunch of questions about the same subject, sometimes I'll put those in a blog. But I do encourage people to reach out and ask questions. And like I said, I have clients all over the world, as far away as Australia and Malaysia, Europe, and all over the U.S. and North America. That's the beauty of modern technology, is that we can do that pretty easily, actually, on a lot of issues. There are some that don't lend themselves to that. So thanks for allowing me to get that information out there.
Well, we've also posted it in our chat for everyone. We have great people who pass on all of the information. Our audience is just so supportive. So I know they'll pass on all this information. We're looking at your website with the contact information, and that's what I've posted.
Well, thank you so very much, Sherry. And thank you both. This has just been delightful to spend this hour with you. And when I say I'd love to come back, I really mean it. The conversation has been fantastic, and you know, if you want to look to final point, to get back to what Richard just was mentioning about I'm safe, I have food, I have shelter, just look at the Native Americans, how they lived, and everybody can do that. They call it, in modern times, they call it walking the red path. I use the Native Americans because we're in North America. All the tribal cultures were fairly similar. Once you get rid of the cultural semantics, that's the word I was looking for earlier, look how they lived, simply in balance. And were they perfect? No. But, boy, they had a much – the earth wasn't polluted. There were plenty of resources because they never took advantage of it and raped it. And unfortunately, we have to change things if we're going to survive, because the planet is going to get mad and shake us off someday like a dog with fleas. I truly believe that.
One of our listeners, Lisa, has posted, which I think is a great end to the whole show, and she says, I think one of the lessons we need to learn is that life is not necessarily all about our personal perspective, but we're also here providing lessons in support of others.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Thank you, Dr. Peel.
Thank you so much, Dr. McGrail. I think we'll definitely have you back, and then we'll dive deep into the pool of quantum thinking.
that would be an absolute pleasure. And I thank you both for your kindness and generosity. Have a great day, and until next time.
Thanks very much, Doctor. And thank you, Sherry, and everybody have a great rest of the weekend. And for those of us, for those of you joining us on the Guardians Network this evening, Sherry's time at 6 p.m. That information is available at soundhealthoptions.com. Click on the something tab.
And if you are busy, we will be running that again. Remember, we run that for a couple of weeks or so, so everybody who's a member, and there are hundreds of you, can make sure to see the show.
I recommend that allergies class tremendously.
Thank you, Richard.
Very powerful. Very powerful. All right, everybody, have a great Sunday, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday. And, Sherry, I'm certain you and I will talk soon.
Thank you, Richard.
Bye-bye.